Hello, everyone. This is Sandy Pastor with OSC's Conversations. Today, we have Dr. Devine and Cheryl Ipema from Rush Copley Medical Center, and we're here today to talk about chronic disease. But before we do that, I'd like to give an opportunity to Dr. Devine and Cheryl Ipema to introduce themselves.
I'm Dr. John Devine. I'm a family physician with Rush Copley Medical Group. I've been a family doc for 23 years now. Very interested in health maintenance and chronic disease.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Ipema. I'm the Director of Clinical Integration and Quality at Rush Copley Medical Center. I've been at Rush Copley for 12 years and very interested in community education in regards to healthcare needs.
Great. And today we're here to talk about chronic disease. I understand that this is something that Rush Copley is really going to put an effort into in the upcoming years. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, a little background on this. Every 3 years, hospitals are required to conduct a community health needs assessment in order to identify the top health priorities in their community. In 2013 and in 2016, Rush Copley's assessment identified chronic disease as a top need. So our goal with this education activity is to provide some sessions focusing on helping you understand what it means to have a chronic disease, teaching you how to help yourself through preventative care, and to provide some resources to help you cope with you or your loved one's conditions.
So what is chronic disease then, exactly, Dr. Devine? You could probably answer that best.
So chronic disease is a long-standing condition, unlike acute. So acute would be short-term, a strain, a sprain, a cold, a flu, things like that that are temporary and generally self-limited or require only short treatment. Whereas chronic diseases are conditions that you deal with for many years or for life. Examples of this may be diabetes, hypertension, arthritis, things of this nature that don't go away, that you have to manage over time.
And it gets very expensive. So here at the Senior Center, we see lots of people with chronic disease. And I know when we are helping them with Medicare and looking at the cost of diabetes drugs, it can be upwards of $2,000 a month with insurance coverage.
For some of the newer medications, yes, some of them are extraordinarily expensive. There are many older ones that are not. Mm-hmm. And the good news is for people highly motivated, there are many things you can do self-management-wise that are very cost-effective to manage diseases like diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. One of them is exercise, which I know the Oswego Senior Center has multiple classes to help with that, which I've referred my patients to before. And so these are things under people's control to a large degree that can be cost-effective and healthy that do not require $2,000 a month in drug costs all the time. So there are things that people can do to manage their own conditions if they can stay motivated and engaged.
Right, so thinking of exercise as maybe one of their medications that they have to take every day.
If we had a pill that did everything for you that exercise can, it would be the all-time best-selling pill of forever. So it's underutilized by most Americans. And it is relatively cheap. You have a free, what was it again?
The Heart and Bones class.
Heart and Bones class that you can come to most every day. Tai Chi and yoga are great. The fall prevention class there. So people with osteoporosis, which is a chronic condition, can benefit from free or low-cost classes in their community that can dramatically improve their chances for having good outcomes with the diseases. It's not all about the medications.
A lot of times it's about the knowledge of the disease and knowing about it. You know, what is the disease and how did it come to be, number one, and what can I do to change prognosis or outcomes so I can have a better quality of life. So how do people go about getting that knowledge?
So, of course, their best resource is going to be their physician. And building that relationship with a primary care physician is one of the most important steps that you can do with a chronic disease. Other than that, people like to go on, you know, the websites and things like that and look. You need to go to reliable websites when you're looking for information on chronic diseases. So the CMS, the Centers for Medicaid Services, actually has a very good resource for chronic diseases. They have a whole educational series for lay people. So if you go to cms.gov and go into just type in resources for chronic disease, you'll have a whole series that will come up that you can download and look and see and answer questions for. The CDC, which is the Center for Disease Services, also has a website. It's cdc.gov. They actually have entire modules. So you can go in there, you can put in diabetes, and they will have an entire educational module, including a goal-setting session where you can make goals for yourself.
Goals are so important in managing chronic disease.
Managing chronic disease, and then they'll give you resources on how to meet those goals. So as Dr. Devine said, exercise. If you don't have anything in your area, they will put a walking program together for you. So those are good websites to go to if you want to increase your knowledge. Other things such as the Mayo Clinic is another good one. And, of course, all of the American associations. So the American Association for Heart Disease, American Association for Diabetes, American Association for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, all of those will have really good information and also resources for people.
That's great. So if you aren't on the internet and you need this information, should you ask your doctor and have a good relationship with your doctor? But how, you know, when you're with the doctor so often, your time is crunched, and usually with chronic disease there's a lot of questions. So how do they maximize the use of your time and their time in the office, Dr. Devine?
So that can be difficult, but making sure you have a key couple, three questions to ask that are most important to you at an office visit is a great idea. Having someone with you is generally not a bad idea. So if you have a loved one, a family member who can go to the physician visit with you, sometimes two sets of ears are better than one, and can be very helpful for folks who are managing chronic conditions. Physician's office can give you educational information typically themselves, but they can recommend websites, and libraries can be a good source of information. If you don't have internet access, there's many community resources that could help you find those, computer access, internet access, maybe the senior center,
books.
What's a book?
Books. They can read a book on it if they don't.
Is that the paper thing that you open?
It has paper. It's usually a little bit heavy. There's lots of knowledge in them a lot of times. It's amazing.
Books can be very helpful too, and yes. they are still out there.
That's good. Good to hear. So a lot of times I hear about sleep being a common problem with aging, especially, and people throughout the lifespan, and sleep apnea has been creeping up into conversations a lot. Is sleep apnea a chronic condition?
Yes, sleep apnea is generally a chronic condition. People who have sleep apnea often have drowsiness during the daytime, falling asleep during the daytime. They're usually snorers, loud snorers, and will have apneic episodes or stop breathing episodes in the middle of the night. Someone in the same house might notice this. The patient probably won't, although they sometimes sort of gag themselves awake. So those can be some of the typical symptoms. Most folks with sleep apnea may have a few extra pounds on, maybe a little more heavy than they want to be, often have larger neck sizes. So these can be some of the things to look for sleep apnea. Proper diet exercise can help these conditions. So there are people who, if with significant weight loss, can improve and sometimes resolve sleep apnea. But that is, sleep apnea is a condition that should be assessed by your physician. Some people need sleep studies and treatment for this condition.
So do you help patients set goals for themselves? Because we know in chronic disease, making goals and having kind of short-term goals and long-term goals for health is imperative to outcomes that are, you know, for quality of life and all that good kind of stuff. So do you at the doctor's office help people set goals, or do you just encourage them to set goals?
So for conditions such as diabetes, a physician will often set goals for certain indicators such as a hemoglobin A1C, which is a 3-month measure of how well your diabetes is in control. And for some people, less than 7, some people 7 to 7.9. They may be given goals by their physician or they should ask about those. A diabetic, for instance, patient should know what their hemoglobin A1C is, as an example. Blood pressure, same thing. People with high blood pressure or hypertension, generally there are blood pressure goals. Sometimes the numbers can be controversial depending on what population you're talking about, but the individual physician with their patient should set goals for where they'd want to be and how to get to those goals, whether that's through proper diet, exercise, or medications, or a combination of all those. I do want to put a plug in for, we mentioned exercise, 150 minutes a week of aerobic exercise, 2 days of resistance training a week. That's things like push-ups or bands or weights or classes that are resistance-based. And then for diet, there's no magic there, but two of the better, I think, evidence-based diets are now the whole food plant-based diets gaining a lot of traction.
Yeah.
So essentially vegan plus, and then the Mediterranean diet. So these seem to have healthy outcomes for heart primarily and other conditions.
Yeah, we see that a lot. You had mentioned resistance training and strength training as a part of it, because often we think, oh, well, if I just go on a walk, then that's enough. But we know that to build bone mass, we need to have some sort of resistance and strength training. Does that help with osteoporosis, which is another chronic disease?
The weight-bearing exercise or walking is probably the best, but strength training also helpful there. And fall prevention. So older adults who engage in both aerobic and the resistance training and balance exercises, that can help prevent. If you prevent a fall, you can prevent a fracture.
Right.
So usually our bones peak around age 28, and it's a downhill slide from there.
Oh, uplifting.
Sorry to say that.
And we're living to over 100.
However, but you can do things to slow that decline, and some of those are health adequate calcium and vitamin D intake in your diet and in your drink, and then also the aerobic exercise and weight-bearing exercise is key. And then some people do need medication if they're at high risk for fracture.
Okay. So Rush Copley, I know, uses my chart as a way to show results of tests and to remind you to go to the doctor or to make an appointment or to remind you of an appointment too. You know, how can this benefit people with chronic disease?
Well, my chart and similar resources like my chart, different organizations have different ones, really helps to coordinate care across different physicians. So it can help each family and the caregivers understand what's going on and see what needs to be done. But it also helps with coordinating across physicians. So, for example, at Rush Copley, if you go to Dr. Devine for your as your primary care physician and he would refer you to a pulmonologist for, say, COPD, they can both see the medical record. But that's not always the case if you go to a different physician. And so my chart can help make sure that you have the information to bring to the new physician by printing off a list of your medications, etc. The government has been pushing hospitals to try to get a system together that can be going across different institutions on one hand. And then on the other hand, they have prevented that by all the HIPAA rules and regulations. So at this point, your medical record belongs to you. It's not accessible by other practitioners. And so you need to know what's in your medical record, and you need to be able to share that with physicians across the board.
Right, because it helps with you. I mean, when you see something in my chart, it's not just your chart that you've only seen them for their appointments, right? So you could see everything.
So we use a computer system called Epic, and many large hospitals in this area have Epic and across the nation. And one of the nice things is with Epic, there is, if a patient signs a consent form, we have better access to outside records than we ever have before. That's an improvement. Patients do have to give their consent, but we are able to access more and more outside records, which helps with coordination of care. And should help with cost because you shouldn't reorder tests that were just done somewhere else. So that is something that is improving management of both acute and chronic conditions, better access to medical information from multiple sources. So I expect that to improve going forward. HIPAA privacy regulations can slow that down, and that's you know appropriate, but a difficult balance to strike.
Right. So often here at the Senior Center, I hear all about people's medical experiences because they let me know. And sometimes they say, you know, Sandy, I don't really, my doctor isn't hearing me. I don't feel like I'm meshing with them. So what is the advice on how to deal with that?
You need to have a doctor that you mesh with. So there's lots of opportunities. I think one of the things that we need to encourage everyone to do is to really have questions. Dr. Devine kind of touched on that. But write your questions down and make sure that you're asking the questions and getting the answers that you need. And if you're not, then to also identify that to the physician that you're dealing with and say, you know, I have these questions. You need to be asking questions such as, you know, are there any underlying issues that we can take care of? What are my medications? Are there any interactions between this medications and the other medications I'm taking? Do I need a specialist is a good question to ask. So that if you're not meshing with the physician that you're dealing with now, maybe going to a specialist will help with that. Patients have the right to choose their physician. And so you need to choose a physician that you can mesh with and bond with, because that, as we identified earlier, is the most important thing that you can do to help manage your chronic disease.
And the, you know, patient-physician relationship, like any relationship, they're not perfect. You know, there are times when you may not have the perfect relationship, and working on it can be helpful. And there are times when you just have to say, hey, this relationship is not working out. I'm going to seek out a different provider. And that's okay. Every doc knows, an advanced nurse practitioner or PA understands that not every patient is the right fit with every provider, and that's okay. But being able to work on things, recognizing you may not get exactly everything as you want it in a relationship with a provider, just like in a relationship with other people.
Right, of course.
We brought that up at one time. Who hasn't dated and said, yeah, this date is not working out, I'm out of here.
Oh, you didn't marry the first person you dated?
You don't marry the first person that you date.
So
sometimes, you know, it doesn't mesh and you just need to move on.
But you don't have to be like a Hollywood person and get divorced every 33 days. You know?
Yeah. Oh, so, well.
That's not helpful to managing your care.
No. Well, it's all in the Epic system, right? Right. You know, often with chronic disease, we find that there's depression that happens alongside of it, which can compound the effect of the chronic disease, because not only is there the physical ailment that's happening, but there's the mental health and emotional health that's being impacted as well. How do you guys talk about that with people?
So the emotional side to chronic disease is huge, because dealing with chronic conditions is problematic. It's very difficult. There's constant disease management you have to do. It'd be nice to say, hey, you have diabetes, take penicillin for 10 days, you'll be cured. But we don't have that. And so it's an ongoing management problem, which can be a large burden for people. And because of that, many people get worn down and ultimately depressed who have diabetes or heart disease. And there are good studies indicating the numbers of people who have major depression as a result or consequence or byproduct of these chronic diseases is not low. So on the medical side, we screen for it more. And I understand that the Oswego Senior Center, you're offering depression screening also. I think that's great. So very common that people have mental health problems that arise from their chronic diseases or are common anyway. And recognizing these is probably the first thing. A lot of folks, depression manifests as aches, pains, and fatigue.
Yes.
And so people feel that they're having physical symptoms. They're frustrated when they don't have a clean diagnosis and, hey, take these pills and it'll make your pain and your fatigue go away. Sometimes there's an underlying mental health condition, a depression, adjustment disorder that needs to be addressed.
The biggest part is educating yourself about not only your chronic disease, but understanding how you're feeling about it. Trying to stay positive, trying to turn negatives into positives. So looking at your lifestyle and what are the good things that are going to come out of this is a good thing to look at. Appreciating small victories. So especially when you start to do some of the changes in your lifestyle that are helping you to manage your disease, to appreciate those things. So small weight losses or being able to now, you know, walk to the mailbox and things like that without becoming short of breath or having difficulty. Those are small victories that need to be celebrated. Paying attention to the stress that you're feeling in your life and being able to talk about that. And one of the important things is to remember that in goal setting, you need to do some goal setting so that you can continue to do the things that you love to do and rewarding yourself by doing those things. So to me, goal setting, my background is in rehab and pulmonary and cardiac rehab. And goal setting was a very important part of that. And goals don't have to be big, you know, glorious goals, but, you know,
I'll lose 100 pounds in 5 weeks.
You know, I want to be able to go to the park and stay for half an hour and play with my grandchildren is a wonderful goal.
Right.
You know, and those are things that not only that you love, they reduce stress, they make you happy. Those are, you know, multiple achievement goals. And so those are the things to look at. And to understand when you feel well and when you do not feel well and try to stay away from some of those stressful situations. One of the things we did in rehab with pulmonary patients is had them pay very close attention to the barometric pressure because there's research that shows that the barometric pressure affects how people are able to breathe. So, you know, in the newspaper, they would have the barometric pressure for the whole week. And so we would teach them to say, you know, on these days when the barometric pressure is good for you, those are the days that you need to go shopping or go out with your friends or, you know, go see your grandchildren. Don't try to do it on days that you know it's not going to be successful. All of those things helped with the depression.
That's great to hear about that. And I agree that goal setting is one of the biggest things that people can do for themselves and chronic disease, managing chronic disease, but just all throughout life, you know, you should have a goal that you're working to achieve. And in aging, sometimes we forget that or we no longer have that career goal or things like that. And so we have to find new goals for ourselves. And perhaps it is around managing our health or having better quality of life or things like that. But making goals achievable and objectable are things that will help in being successful. Because otherwise, you know,
if the goal is not meaningful to you, it's not a goal for you.
Right.
And, you know, somebody can give you a goal, but it's not your goal. So you need to identify goals that are meaningful to yourself.
And so there's research out there that talks about motivation. And so there's intrinsic motivation, which is the internal flame of motivation. And then there's external motivation, which is Dr. Devine telling me that I need to lay off the candy.
Halloween's coming.
Watch Halloween's coming. And so him telling me that is not the right kind of motivation. But for me to say, hey, I don't feel good after I eat that, would be the indicator for the internal motivation, the intrinsic motivation to take the lead in order for me to have better outcomes for myself. Right? Does that make sense?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why we say, you know, it doesn't have to be a grandiose goal. Make it something that's important to you, something that you miss in your life and that you want to achieve. And then do little steps to achieve that goal.
Right. So if my goal is to lose weight, because, you know, that is a big compromising factor for a lot of chronic disease, my goal shouldn't just be to lose weight. It should be I want to exercise 3 times a week because I am not doing anything right now.
And I want to lose 2 pounds a week or 5 pounds this week or whatever. I mean, if you look at different...
I would say not more than 2, though, medically. When you go too high,
5 pounds a month.
Yeah. Half pound, 2 pounds a week.
And the goal should be achievable, and I think that's something that we need to remember as well. And so, you know, your goal shouldn't be, I'm going to run a marathon, because is that really an achievable goal?
Unless it's something like 2 years from now.
To begin with, I would never do that. It would never be my goal.
So that would be an external...
external goal for me, exactly. But, you know, to find something that's important to you and then break it down into achievable sections so that you actually are moving towards your goal and being able to recognize that you're moving towards your goal.
Perfect. Anything else to add about chronic disease that you'd like people to know?
Some resources within the community.
Yeah.
You know, at Rush Copley, we have a lot of resources for chronic diseases. We do have a pulmonary rehab. We have a cardiac rehab. We have diabetic education that's available. We have the Waterford Center, which is primarily for cancer, but also looks at other chronic diseases. We have a movement disordered support group. We have all kinds of cancer support groups and cardiac support groups. Some are just for women, some are just for men, some are for groups, some are for caregivers. We have the Whole Healthplex that has additional educational opportunities for individuals and for families.
And you have a pool there.
And we have a pool there and a hot tub.
Yeah.
In the community, the senior service centers are wonderful resources. So, you know, look where your senior center is and utilize those services. Some things that people don't remember is that if they have a managed insurance company, oftentimes those managed care insurance companies will have care managers that can also give you resources.
Right.
And some of those insurances actually will support those resources for you and help to get you to those things and may give some incentives for you to join those things. So those are
I know that
to remember.
This year, Medicare Advantage for 2019, there's an option available for the managed care companies to help folks with pre-diabetes to not get to the diabetes 2 point. So that's pretty exciting to hear that they're taking charge and helping people have a better quality of life.
Right.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you both for coming. Dr. Devine, do you have anything else to add?
No, I think we covered a lot of stuff. Did I give a plug for, though, the American Academy of Family Physician for educational resources, so AAFP.org, American College of Physician, Arthritis Foundation, other resources, I think, that we gave a number of those, but those are other resources on websites, and your books, of course.
Yeah. And the books at the library.
At the library.
At the library. Fantastic. Well, thank you both for joining me, and we'll be doing another podcast coming up about more information on chronic disease, so we'll be looking forward to that. Thanks again, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.